So good morning again. As I mentioned earlier today, we're going to reflect a little bit on the third UU principle, which asserts that as Unitarian Universalists, we covenant to affirm and promote the acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. And if at any point, I realize it's probably hard to hear me through the mask, so I took that off. But if at any point you can't hear me, please signal. Yeah, I do have a tendency to drift off sometimes, so if you please let me know. So this principle has two parts, right? It's actually, if you've been trying to listen to it or pay attention to it, as I've said it, it's like it's hard to remember what the first part is by the time you get to the second part. So I'm going to say those separately. We covenant to affirm and promote acceptance of one another. And we covenant to affirm and promote encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Now, for stylistic reasons, each of the seven principles starts with, we covenant to affirm and promote, which works well for some of the principles. I think in this case, it's a bit awkward, so I'm going to try and rephrase the principles so they're a little bit more direct. One of the things that I find a little awkward is that it kind of buries the active part, the encouragement and the acceptance get buried after a bunch of other verbs, right? And so I think that's awkward. The other thing that I find interesting is the second part reads, we covenant to affirm and promote encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, which doesn't actually say who's doing the encouragement, right? If you notice, it's in our congregations this is supposed to happen. But, you know, the congregations, that's us, right? So clearly, it's intended that we should be encouraging one another to spiritual growth, and I don't know why it doesn't say that, but it doesn't. So that's clearly what's intended. So if I untangle all of that, what I see is two parts. We covenant, or covenant is another way to, we vow, right? We're committed to accepting one another, and we covenant to encourage one another's spiritual growth. We can consider each of those commitments in turn. First, we covenant to accept one another. That's a big promise, and it's an important one. It's also a significant extension of the first principle, which asserts the inherent worth and dignity of each person, but it does not actually call us into relationship with anyone. By contrast, the third principle asks us not just to acknowledge others, but to welcome and include them in our congregations. There's lots of ways to think about inclusion, but the one to notice that I think about with respect to this principle because of its focus on spiritual growth is this includes the welcoming of all faiths. Even in this small congregation, I know that we have a diversity of faiths and faith backgrounds. Jewish, Buddhist, Christian, earth-based, and more. All of those, we have some lifelong UUs too. I don't want to exclude any of them. So, right? So we have people from all walks of life and from all faiths. We have some congregants who believe in God. We have some congregants who don't. And we have some congregants who would have to know what you mean by God before they could even begin to answer that question. Our third principle calls us to embrace these differences with humility, honoring our diversity, and trusting that each of us is seeking our own spiritual truth, each in our own imperfect way. We are promising to do our best to truly see and listen to one another. Acceptance means that I trust that each of you have something of value to teach me, and I also trust that I'm welcome in this community, right? I'm welcoming of you. I feel, you know, it's joining in. Such acceptance is a logical outcome of our universalist heritage, which teaches that God is love, and since we are each made in God's image, we too are manifestations of love. That heritage evokes the fundamental wholeness in each one of us. It asserts that we, me, you are already whole. The second part of the third principle, encouragement to spiritual growth, recognizes our imperfect expression of that wholeness and exhorts us to help one another on our journeys to realizing wholeness. So that brings us to spiritual growth. And I think it might be good to step back and think about what does it actually mean to encourage spirit? What encourages spiritual growth? How does that happen, right? What does it mean? If we're responsible for encouraging one another's spiritual growth, what would that actually mean? And to kind of, one way to think about that, or to frame that, I'm going to share a story that I found online in a sermon by the UU minister, David Usher. The story goes, in 1947, 11 o'clock on Sunday morning was called the most segregated hour in America. You may have heard that expression before. At that time, in recognizing the deep wound of segregation, the minister of the First Unitarian Society of Chicago wanted to integrate his church. So he asked his congregation to decide whether they agreed with opening their doors to welcoming people of color. There was intense debate. Not everyone was convinced that integrating the church was a good idea. One board member who was adamantly opposed to integrating the church objected loudly and gave many reasons the church should not be integrated. In the midst of a heated discussion, another board member turned to him and asked, "What is this church for?" The upset member answered with yet more arguments against integrating the church. His friend turned to him again and he asked, "What is this church for?" In frustration and anger, the objecting member turned to him and blurted out, "To change people like me." Right. That's the nub of spiritual growth right there. That's what it looks like. It's a change in people like me and you. When I grow spiritually, I develop deeper or different understandings. I strengthen my faith. I live my faith with more integrity and more intensity. These are changes in what I think, in what I believe, and in how I choose to embody those beliefs in my daily life. So how might we go about encouraging one another to spiritual growth? That is, how do we go about encouraging change in our beliefs, thoughts, or actions? As a faculty member, I learned early on that I can't make anyone learn. No matter how clear my explanations of algebra or calculus might be to me, they will not necessarily be clear to my students. You may have had the experience of sitting in a classroom or perhaps in a public lecture where the speaker went on at great length about something that made absolutely no sense to you. You may even be confident that that speaker knew what they were talking about and was explaining it as clearly as they possibly could. It just didn't make sense to you. They weren't able to teach you anything. And there's a reason for that. The language of pedagogy is misleading. It really isn't possible to teach anyone anything. People can learn, and we can help them learn, but we cannot teach them if by teaching we mean transmitting knowledge from one head to another. Similarly, you may have been the recipient of someone's lengthy political arguments, perhaps at a Thanksgiving dinner, that was attempting to convince you that their view was right and yours was wrong. Or you may have spent hours trying to convince others of the truth of your own view with your sound and reasonable arguments. As examples of these, where we might have encountered this, just consider any of the debates that we have all heard or participated in about contentious issues like abortion, the death penalty, same-sex marriage, transgender rights, systemic racism, universal health care, or any number of other issues that have cropped up in the last 20 or 30 years. In each case, there are ardent partisans on all sides, each trying to change the minds of those with whom they disagree with well-reasoned and thoughtful arguments, and it doesn't really seem to work. Such arguments very rarely manage to change minds. It turns out you cannot change people's minds, and no one else can change yours. The only mind that I can change is my own. The only mind you can change is yours. So if growth is change, then change cannot make someone grow. We cannot make someone grow spiritually. We can invite them to growth, but we can't require it. Your spiritual growth depends on you. Mine depends on me. But that doesn't mean there's nothing we can do to encourage growth, to foster growth, to nurture it. In fact, if we are to grow spiritually, at least in my experience, I think we need help. Left to our own devices, certainly when I'm left to my own devices, I'm not likely to change. Change is really hard. It can be sometimes painful, and it requires work. And without outside support, we likely retrench our current position rather than grow. To grow, we need each other. Last year, David McGraney wrote an interesting book, How Minds Change, and it's a really fascinating read, and I recommend it. In it, he explores the psychology of change and what leads us to change our minds. To illustrate the ideas, he describes a number of different groups that are utilizing approaches aligned with the psychology of change and that are effectively creating conditions that allow people, and perhaps sometimes even encourage people to change their minds. If you've been involved in any political campaigns using deep canvassing, if you're familiar with that term, that's one of the methods that's been developed that relies on the psychology of change. There are lots of others in many other fields as well. And even though these groups develop their methods independently, they share a couple of really of common features that when you sit with them, at least when I sit with them, they resonate at, yes, this is what creates change. First, to be able to change or learn or grow, we need to be in an environment where we feel safe. Growth happens within a community. The first step to encouraging growth within a group is to create a rapport with each group member, among the group members, and to build trust. Everyone needs to feel seen and accepted. Everyone needs to be able to trust that each member of the group is there to grow and help the other members grow and support one another. Trust allows us to explore beliefs and ideas together openly. Growth becomes a collaborative endeavor. I know many of you have been involved in groups here at the church that have helped you grow spiritually. And I encourage you to reflect on what made that work. And I, in my experience, it has been because it's a group of people I trust and with whom I can explore and really kind of look at what's happening. Once that foundation of acceptance and trust has been establishing, exploring the reasoning behind our thinking or beliefs with empathy and curiosity becomes the catalyst for growth. So what happens then is we can ask ourselves and each other, why do we believe what we believe? Why do I believe what I believe? What experiences have we had to support our beliefs? What doubts do we have? What's the source of those doubts? Spiritual growth is not guaranteed in such an environment and with such questions, but it becomes possible. So that what's really key here is that the community of trust and the willingness to kind of ask ourselves questions, ask one another questions, and really sit and be with one another and listen to those responses. We can live our third principle by listening carefully and empathetically to one another and to ourselves. Careful listening acknowledges the speaker and communicates our appreciation and acceptance of them. You may have noticed this, but often when someone is speaking, and I'll say this is, I've certainly noticed this in meetings, say faculty meetings at the college, we spend more time critiquing their statements and preparing our response in our heads than we do seeking to understand what they're trying to convey. Careful listening requires us to set aside our agenda, to stop critiquing and responding, and trust that we'll have an opportunity to speak and be heard, and focus instead on understanding. When listening carefully, we focus all of our attention on the speaker, seeking to capture the feelings or thoughts they are sharing. We set aside our judgment. We postpone our response. We just listen. Rather than interrupting with questions or our own thoughts, careful listening asks us that we allow wait time after the speaker is finished to let their sharing resonate and sink in. Even after they have finished and there has been a pause for reflection, we may still postpone responding and instead paraphrase what we have heard. Or we may ask open, non-judgmental questions to confirm that we have understood the speaker correctly. Listening in this way helps the speaker feel seen and accepted, and it fosters the trust necessary for growth to happen. I've experienced such listening in a variety of contexts over the last many years, and I'm constantly amazed at the transformation and the healing and the growth that such listening enables in me and in others. And as essential as careful listening is to living our third principle, I want to add that it's even more essential that we bring ourselves fully to our interactions with one another in our community. And I'm not really talking about showing up physically. We can actually be with someone, hold them in our thoughts or in love when we're not there in the room with them. It does help to be there physically. But what I'm really talking about is bringing ourselves into the community fully, being fully present, really there with one another. Being present is essential to listen effectively, since we must be present to receive the speaker and what they want to share. But it's more than that. Your listening presence in this moment calls me to be more present. You being there matters for this moment, right? To create this moment. One thing that I've noticed years ago, some of you may remember this, when we first started adding a period of silence or reflection into our services, I would be surprised if we sat for more than 15 seconds without breaking the silence, because it was just too uncomfortable. Today, we went for 2 minutes and something. I'm not sure. I didn't time it. And today's, there's a profundity to the silences that we share now together in our services that I didn't experience 10 years ago. And I, part of that is because I can feel the presence of people with me, people really being present and being here, kind of really settling into this space. Each of you, each of us, contributes to that presence, that sense of being here, right? That's needed. That presence is needed to get that kind of healing spirit in the space. With our presence, we call each other to be here. When you're present for me, I can be present for you, and vice versa. It creates a sacred space. In that blessed space, being present, spiritual growth is possible. So the most important thing we can do to encourage spiritual growth, I believe the most important thing we can do, is to recognize that our presence matters, that it matters that we're here in the room together or in this space, whether it's in a physical room or not. We're together in this space, and we're holding one another in acceptance and love in ways that allows growth and openness. We are essential to one another as listeners and as witnesses to each of our spiritual journeys. The depth that each of you brings will support others in plumbing their own depths. Your depth supports mine. Their depth will support yours. Words can be helpful, but they're not always necessary. You showing up and being present in and of itself can make the difference. From presence, we foster connection, trust, and relationship, which is the fertile ground for spiritual growth. May it always be so. So before we go to the next element, I'd like to take just another moment for reflection. Let's take a moment for just some silence. And I'll ask you to settle into your seat and just take a moment. Shut your eyes if you're comfortable doing so. Take a moment again to find yourself here, to witness yourself present. It can help to sense your feet on the floor, your sit bones as they connect to the seat, that physicality. Feel your breath as it moves in and out. As you are able, take a moment to try to connect to something larger than yourself. Some people experience this as light, or a sense of love, a larger love. If you can sense that, just allow that light and love to wash over you. Breathing in light and love, breathing it out. As you're able, allow that light and love to expand, embracing those nearby, holding one another in love. And breathe.